of the challenges that modern and progressive Presbyterians must face, whether we like it or not, is that we are Calvinists. We're part of a tradition that was founded by John Calvin, the notoriously grumpy and whiny French pastor and theologian who led the Reformation of the Church in Geneva and from there influenced the Reformation of Francophile Switzerland, the Netherlands, and Scotland. He also inspired significant Protestant movements in England, France, Germany, Hungary, and Italy. In North America, Calvin's followers started the churches we know today as Congregationalist churches. We call them the United Church of Christ, the Reformed churches, the Presbyterian churches. Calvin's ideas also had a significant role in forming the Episcopal Church and the Baptist churches. Those churches are theologically eclectic, with large helpings of Calvinism thrown into the mix. So a lot of Protestant Christians are Calvinists. But historically, Presbyterians, perhaps more than anyone else, have worked hard to hold on to Calvinism as a way of defining ourselves. Now, the Church of Scotland, we come from the Church of Scotland, and the Church of Scotland was founded by John Knox, one of Calvin's Scottish devotees, but I've never known a Presbyterian to self-define as Knoxist. I've known several noxious Presbyterians, but no one who called his or herself a Knoxist. And that's probably because Knox was even more of a sourpuss than was Calvin. So we're kind of stuck with being Calvinists, which is a problem because few of us want to be associated with Calvin's reputation for being singularly opposed to happiness. I've heard Calvinists defined as that person who lays awake at night worrying that someone somewhere is having fun. I've also heard it said that Calvinists were opposed to premarital sex because it might lead to dancing. Worse, perhaps, is the theological reputation of Calvin. I know that when I was in high school, we covered Calvin in our world history class, but only to the extent of what we learned about Calvin is that Calvin believed in something called double-barreled predestination. The idea being that God shoots humanity out of a spiritual double-barreled shotgun. And some of us go to heaven, and those shot out of the other barrel go somewhere considerably warmer and further to the south. It's a cruel theology that makes God seem like a sociopath. My first exposure to Calvin in college was in a sociology class where I learned about the theories of someone named Max Weber, who suggested that Calvin was responsible for the development of capitalism because Calvinists would have assumed that God would bless the elect with earthly wealth, and so Calvinists worked hard and earned lots of money as a way of assuring themselves of eternal salvation. Incidentally, another person historians often credit with the development of Calvinism was a philosopher named Thomas Hobbes. And that may be the case, but I'm pretty sure that the main thing John Calvin and Thomas Hobbes inspired was an amazing comic strip about a boy and his tiger. Actually, when it comes to Calvinism, I think Max Weber was correct, but he was only half correct. Calvin did have a role in the development of capitalism, but it probably didn't have much to do with predestination. Rather, capitalism and modern secular democracy came about as a result of a Calvinist doctrine, which actually was far more important to Calvin than was predestination. And that doctrine is called the doctrine of vocation. It's a belief that God calls every human being to do some kind of work, and that every calling is equal in the eyes of God, provided that person follows his or her calling with faithfulness and integrity and does his or her work to the glory of God. If someone does good work, then that work is equal with every other good work. And what this meant practically is that the prince and the ditch digger had equal status before God, provided the prince ruled his kingdom justly and the ditch digger wielded his shovel honestly, and both did the task assigned to them in a way that brought glory to God. And the effects of this doctrine were wide-ranging. It meant that a professional person could not look down on a laborer. And in fact, it meant that laborers should be qualified to vote and hold office and to get an education, because perhaps God was calling the laborer to sit on a city council. It meant that a child born to a working class family could not be excluded from the chance to follow a calling into work that might previously have been considered above his station. It meant that all work was honorable work, provided the work was carried out ethically and honestly. The shop owner, the lawyer, the doctor, the farmer, the shoemaker, the teacher, all were doing important, meaningful, godly work. In Geneva, this meant that watchmakers had a craft that was considered to be sacred. It meant that bankers' transactions were endorsed by the church. And that's why Swiss watches and banks have such solid reputations. Now, so far, I've been talking about vocation using a masculine pronoun, because at first, the freedom inherent in Calvin's doctrine of vocation really only applied to men. But eventually, and far too late, Calvinist churches began to understand that women could be called to work outside the home. And it should be no surprise that Congregationalists and Presbyterians, both Calvinist bodies, were among the first Christian denominations to educate women and later to ordain women to leadership roles in the church. So I confess, I really like Calvin's ideas about vocation. And part of what inspired Calvin's ideas was this morning's lesson from Mark, when Jesus walks along the lake that we call the Sea of Galilee, and he calls out to fishermen, asking them to follow him. Here was Jesus living out a theology of vocation. He was inviting fishermen to be disciples. He was asking laborers to be professional learners, to move outside their station in life, to follow a calling ordained not by society, but by God. Eventually, the call Jesus extended to those fishermen would cause those fishermen disciples to start a new religion. It's a religion that would change the world. Truly, God's call comes to us in mysterious and unexpected ways. And thanks be to God for that. I would consider the Calvinist doctrine of vocation to be one of the great spiritual gifts the Presbyterian Church has to offer, thanks to its Calvinist heritage. The gift is this: every one of us is valued. Every one of us has an important role to play in the unfolding of God's kingdom. Of course, we have to figure out what that calling is, but that can be a joyful thing. The great Presbyterian spiritual writer Frederick Buechner once said, "The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." And if he's right about that, and I think he is, then our first job as Christians is to figure out how to follow our bliss in ways that add beauty and joy and justice and peace to the world. And I'll tell you something. I grew up in Mendocino at a time when the counterculture was still very much alive. I'm all about following my bliss, man. Especially if by doing so, I can help make the world a mellower place. And how awesome is that? The hippies were actually Calvinists. This is not to say that the doctrine of vocation is without its heavy trips. For one thing, the doctrine of vocation involves everyone, which means there really aren't excuses. A lot of us have jobs that are rife with opportunities for dishonesty. Most of us can cut corners in ways that cheat our customers or our employers, and even if we're not employed, we have plenty of chances to be ethically challenged in the various kinds of work for which we're not compensated. And the doctrine of vocation functions like a light in a dark room. In whatever we do, we are called first to glorify God, and that leaves no room for behavior that is morally questionable. We don't get to say something like, "I'm only a mechanic. God doesn't care if I tell my customer her car needs work that, truth be told, is unnecessary." The consultant cannot say, "My customer is so rich she won't notice the extra hours I billed her for time I spent playing golf." The bad news for the Calvinist tempted to be dishonest is this: we're all ministers of God's love and grace. We're all ambassadors for the kingdom of heaven. Everything we do must bring honor and glory to God, and it must be transformative. It must make the world a better place. So that's the bad news. But the good news is that no work is unnecessary. From time to time, I hear parents worry about children who go off to college to study art history or philosophy. And they worry because these areas of study aren't useful because they don't lead to lucrative careers. God is not that kind of parent. If Calvin's theology of vocation is to be believed, then every calling is of value. Artists, lawyers, roofers, doctors, pastors, teachers, financiers, farmers, poets, theoretical physicists, thespians, we're all needed. We all bring value to the world around us when we work diligently and honestly and to the glory of God. So, dearly beloved, as we consider the call Jesus extended to the fishermen, I invite you to consider how God might be calling out to you. How might God be calling you to use your work to make the world a better place for all God's children? How might God be calling you to create beauty, to teach peace? And the answer to that question, there is a great spiritual gift.